For 70 years, The Tonight Show has served as one of television's most consistent and consistently iconic places for late-night banter and laughs. From Steve Allen to Jack Parr to Johnny Carson, Jay Leno, Conan O'Brien, and Jimmy Fallon, this television show is iconic. 6,714 episodes of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson that aired, 4,610 episodes of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, 145 total number of episodes of The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien that aired, and just over 2,000 of The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. And 50 million people who watched Johnny Carson's final episode in 1992. By television ratings alone, late night isn't the force it used to be. The quartet of NBC's Tonight Show, CBS's Late Show, ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, and The Daily Show collectively averaged 10.5 million viewers a night a decade ago. And now together they pull in 4.8 million people a night, according to Nielsen. Carson, by the way, pulled 10 to 15 million people in his heyday. Bill Carter is what I consider America's late night historian. Bill is also behind docuseries, The Story of Late Night, which can be streamed on Max, Amazon Prime, and Apple TV. Bill has also written about the television industry for nearly five decades, most of those years at the New York Times, where he was the chief television correspondent for 26 years. He's the author of countless books, including two of them about late night, The Late Shift, about the competition between David Letterman and Jay Leno to succeed Carson as the host of The Tonight Show, and The War for Late Night, about NBC misbegotten effort to install Conan as Tonight Show host while retaining Jay in a new primetime show. Bill Carter now writes for Late Nighter and a bunch of other things, which I want to talk about, and he joins us tonight. Bill, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. You know, Meet the Press, the Today Show might be some of the oldest television programs, but the Tonight Show at 70 is one of the most iconic shows in American history without question. Right, Bill?
Absolutely, and it is definitely the oldest entertainment show, unless I count, I guess there are some soap operas, but I don't know if I count them. But in terms of entertainment, it's I think, way ahead of anything else.
It's funny, when I hear the words Tonight Show, I can't think of anybody else but Johnny Carson. I just can't, because he did it for 30 years, but it had, you know, it's decades of hosts, you know, before him. Well, and the beginning was Steve Allen. I mean, he's the guy that when they created Today, pretty much, they created Tonight.
Well, so really what happens, Today became sort of a success, and the guy who created that, who was Pat Weaver, who Sigourney Weaver's father, interestingly, he came up with the idea of let's do a show at night. They didn't initially think of it as an entertainment show. Like, I guess they were thinking sort of the same package like Today's Show with features, et cetera, et cetera. But Steve Allen had been doing a local show, and they saw him and they realized he was the kind of talent that they wanted. And they basically turned it over to Steve, and Steve kind of conceived the show. I mean, that we know, you know, with a desk and a monologue and guests coming on and entertainers and things like that. And it was really quite a remarkable explosion of interest in the show, because at the time, you know, television wasn't that experienced. It didn't have much going on after 11 o'clock at night. Right. Frankly, you used to see a test pattern.
Right.
So it was open space. And NBC was smart. This is open space. We can just grab this. And they grabbed it and established a franchise unlike any other, you know, that franchise, an entertainment franchise that has gone on every year since.
And Steve was so talented, and as you know, and, you know, it's like Letterman revered Johnny, but he was most like Steve Allen, the stunts, like diving into a pool of Jell-O. He made it very interesting for the one of the first late night shows ever.
Absolutely. And definitely Letterman admired Steve Allen enormously. Because he was wildly creative. He wasn't a comic, per se. You know, he wasn't really. He was an entertainer, old-fashioned entertainer. He played the piano, he sang, he did jokes. But he was spontaneously funny. He had that impish kind of approach to everyday things. And he made it topical, you know, and he had a core group of comedians that came on with him. And it was extremely new for television to do something like that, because, you know, people didn't, from radio, that was not a model. Most of TV in those days was a model of what radio had been. So this was very, very fresh and instantaneous. And you know what was actually groundbreaking also about it? It was live.
Right.
It was actually live.
Right.
So here's Steve Allen coming on at 11:15 when he started, because the late local news only was 15 minutes long then.
Right.
So the show was an hour and 45 minutes long. An hour and 45 minutes long, starting at 11:15.
Yeah.
He said something very interesting on the very first show, because he comes on the first show. He literally has a yellow legal pad in front of him with like what they're going to be doing in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's thinking about, but he says to the audience, we're starting right now, but this show is going to go on forever. Meaning till, one in the morning. But it did go on.
It did. And it was almost like, honestly, because it was the early days of television, it was almost like putting on an experimental show. Almost every night, especially
in the beginning,
right? Yeah,
no question. It was experimental. They were doing things, and all of a sudden, it wouldn't work, and they'd have to go to commercial. I mean, it was live, so things that failed. But he was inventive and funny and very compelling and television. You know, one of the things about Letterman that was also true of Steve Allen and Johnny, they were broadcasters.
Yeah,
they were broadcasters. They used the medium.
Yeah,
they weren't just comics. They used television. Steve Allen did Man in the Street stuff, the first guy
right.
who ever did that.
Right.
He set up this big, you know what a camera would have looked like in those days, this big,
yeah.
huge camera out in the street and grabbed people. And he was funny, and he read headlines that Leno did, came right from him. I mean, Steve Allen was very, very inventive. And he only did it for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Because he was so successful, NBC said, well, why waste him at late night? And they moved him to primetime.
Right, exactly. And then came down the road, Jack Parr, and I would say about Jack, it was definitely a pivot of some sort. But even though Steve Allen did a monologue, so to speak, I think it was Jack who really established
Absolutely.
That as that feature, right?
Yes, because Steve sat behind the desk. And he didn't do a stand-up. He wasn't a stand-up.
Right.
And Jack Parr was a monologist, and he was a verbal, artist. He used words. That was his thing. He didn't play. He didn't do music. And all that. He was clever and witty and sharp and sharp-edged. And he electrified the country. He really did.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Steve was successful. But then when he left, they tried to do some other goofy thing with Jack Lasculli
mm-hmm.
some news-oriented thing that really did poorly, and they didn't know what they were going to do until they said, let's try another funny person, and Parr saved the show and revived it. But he made it a real phenomenon because he was so unpredictable, Jack Parr. He was a mercurial human being.
Yes, he was, yeah.
He would get angry,
yes, he
would get upset, he would cry,
I know.
And that, interestingly, that played on television. It was like, hey, we're getting to know a guy. And one of the keys to The Tonight Show, and really all the late night shows that have followed, is associating with that host, getting to know the person, hearing about his personal life.
Sure.
Jack Parr would talk about his daughter getting her first bra,
Jesus. For back
right?
then.
He did.
Yeah.
Famously, he did that, yes.
Yeah.
And people thought, well, he's kind of my friend. I like him. I like hanging out with him.
But it was he was just so deep in conversation, and he would have people on that were really, I would say, icons in the making. He would have like the Carol Burnetts, Liza Minnelli, Bob Hope, but he would also mix in authors, political figures.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he really did to kind of
Absolutely.
Establish what Johnny did later.
Absolutely, that's really what he did was say, okay. It's also genuinely a talk show, so you don't have to just have an entertainer on. So here's an author I like, so we'll have him on. Here's this new senator, John Kennedy. Let's have him on. Awful lot of that. He even had the Beatles on first, believe it or not. They weren't on physically, but he showed a tape of them in England.
Yeah.
So he was looking for things beyond the conventional show business, rundown of celebrities.
Well, and because I'm a TV geek myself, like I was born in the late 60s, so I never saw Parr when he was doing the show, but I know, I can picture him saying goodbye, like he was done. There was just one night he was like, yep, see you later. Got better things to do than this, right?
He put in 6 years, okay?
Yeah.
And it was so big, the show was so big, they absolutely believed, a whole lot of people believed, this guy cannot be replaced. You can't replace him. He's so singular a talent this is it. This is the end. And they didn't get a guy who was bigger than he was.
Yeah, I know. Not even at the time, but bigger than he was is true. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as it evolved to Johnny Carson with Bill Carter right after this on 720 WGN. All right, we are celebrating the 70th anniversary of the Tonight Show franchise. And let's get to Johnny here. Like, you know, when he debuted in 1962, he was the cool, new, innovative kid on the block, known for his relaxed stage presence. He was dapper, you know, that monologue of jokes, his golf swing, the banter with McMahon, with band leaders and all that other good stuff. But he played it cool. It took him a little bit when he first got on the air to get his rhythm. But once he got it, it just took off.
It was very interesting because Carson had been hosting a game show called Who Do You Trust?
Right.
And it was, you know, a typical in that era kind of silly game show. But his personality burst through the television screen. You could see, okay, this guy is fresh-faced and funny. And he also was just a little bit naughty. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, he was.
For that era, people would say, oh, he's going there. You know, like just a little, because you couldn't go very far in those days. But he just had that little puckishness to him, you know? And so that was one thing NBC thought was a bit of a risk. And after Parr left, they made a deal with Carson, but there was a gap in between because of his contract on ABC.
Right.
And they tried guest hosts. They had a whole lot of guest hosts. And one of them was Merv Griffin. And Merv Griffin did well. He did well when he hosted The Tonight Show. And there was all kinds of people saying, what are they doing? They should now get rid of that Carson guy and keep Merv Griffin. But they had the deal with Carson. Carson came on, and he may have not found his 100% footing right away, but he was 100% appealing right away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, people tuned in and said, oh, this guy, I like this guy. You know, he was confident. As you said, he's cool, had a coolness to him, but he was so confident on the air. He was a comfortable presence. You never thought, this guy looks a little awkward. He doesn't quite know what he's doing. No, he was entirely in his element, you know? Mm-hmm. This is what he was made to do.
Yeah.
You know, he could have been a stand-up. He later played Vegas and all that. But he was basically a television personality who was very funny and could use the medium. And you know, he was, people forgot about Jack Parr pretty fast.
Yeah, they did. And yeah, it's funny that you say how comfortable he was on air. He was just as uncomfortable off air.
Absolutely.
With anybody.
It's a very interesting thing. I became very friendly with Pete LaSalle, who was his executive producer for many years. And he said, you would not believe how shy a man Johnny Carson was off the air. He was very, very shy, and he would be if he was at some sort of function with everybody else, he wouldn't be talking to people.
No.
And interestingly, Letterman was very similar. Letterman had a similar personality.
Yeah.
But that is I was shocked about that with Carson, because he was on the air. He was so, you know, outgoing and relaxed and comfortable and, you know, ready with the next line, ready,
uh-huh,
anticipating every single thing that was happening on his show, every single thing. I remember I talked to Paul Reiser. Okay, so Paul Reiser was one of many comics who, you know, had a first night on with Carson and did very well. And, and Johnny invited him over to the desk and all that. And he said, you know, when this happened to him, he was not that prepared to do something else. And he got over there and he started to tell a story, right? And he got lost in the story, right? And he said, Carson could see it in my eyes that I was lost, and he jumped in, totally saved it. Right? He said he just absolutely was 100% in control in that show. And that was one of his the keys to his success.
And made people shine. That was a big thing for him, too.
Yeah, absolutely. He knew it. He set people up beautifully, you know, and made them funny when they probably weren't that funny.
Yeah, right.
What I really admired about him was he understood television. He just understood it. You know, he didn't grow up with it, obviously. He grew up with radio, but he absolutely understood how to use that medium.
We were talking about Jeff Sotzing off air, who's Johnny's nephew, who's really in charge of Johnny's estate and his trust and everything. And, you know, with all that there is, I mean, he does an amazing job, you know, keeping that alive and well. But it is a walk. I believe The Tonight Show with Johnny starring Johnny Carson is a walk through American history. I mean, you want to talk about the biggest movie and TV stars, athletes, politicians, singers, comedians, animal acts, and everyday people. I mean, if you wanted to look up anything for historical perspective, you could look at 30 years of that Tonight Show.
Yes, with one little bit of an asterisk, because what is shocking and really appalling is that a whole chunk of the Tonight Show
10 years
were lost.
First 10 years
were lost.
Yeah,
only clips from, you know, the best of those years survived because some idiot at NBC decided it wasn't worth keeping around.
You believe that? It's so true.
And that's, imagine how Carson reacted to that.
And you know, it's funny though. You know, like that's one of the reasons why the Broadcast Museum here in Chicago exists is because their founder, you know, saw tapes just being dumped into the garbage can. And you know, there were things that, you know, here in Chicago was, you know, Bozo was really big here. There was 20,000 shows. There's probably seven of them, you know, from the classic era that actually exist because people taped over them or they just tossed them in the garbage. So you think about those first 10 years. I know there's some audio from his first ever Tonight Show, but how sad is it that we don't get to see really Johnny in his prime in those early days?
No. Yeah. It really is terrible. And many, many guests came on, as you pointed out, from American history, and it's gone. And it's just astonishing that somebody did that. But it's also in keeping with the fact that for a long time, television was the stepchild of the entertainment world. You know, like, don't take it seriously. Oh, it's not really worth much of your time. It's kind of a joke. It's the idiot box. You remember all that?
Oh, yeah.
And so it didn't have the respect it deserved. And later on, when people would say, wow, you know, Carson, wow, he what an iconic figure he is. And those early shows, I'd love to see some of those. Well, they don't exist. What do you mean they don't exist? Somebody plowed them under. I mean, that's just crazy.
Well, and that's why they took what they had. I know it was during one of his negotiations that he took ownership of the Tonight Show. And when they finally moved to Los Angeles, that's really what's on tape and that's been digitized at this point. But like he took control over it. And that's why at least we have 20 years of the Tonight Show preserved for that exact reason. By the way, and the Tonight Show airs, Johnny Carson airs weeknights at 9 on Antenna TV, which is our sister station. It's great to turn that on once in a while. I just want to watch a little Johnny. And he was political and telling jokes, not as political today. And I remember in a 60 Minutes interview, he said, that's not what I'm here for. I'm not here to dig deep and talk politics and make people change their mind. It's the end of the day. It's their end of the evening of people being inundated with these type of things. And I just want people to laugh and relax and enjoy an hour and a half of comedy. Yeah.
He said, I'm an entertainer.
Right.
That's what I do. I can't alienate half the audience. I'm an entertainer. That's what I do. But he was very good at it in the sense that whoever was in power deserved to get skewered. Right?
Right.
He was an equal opportunity artist that way. And so, you know, he would make fun of Jimmy Carter and then he'd make fun of Ronald Reagan.
Right.
You know, that's what he did. And everybody accepted that. Nobody was like thinking they were, you know, committing treason and should be arrested.
Right. You're totally right. Well, we're going to have more with Bill Carter on the 70th anniversary of The Tonight Show after the news next. All right, we are talking to columnist, author, producer Bill Carter on the 70th anniversary of The Tonight Show. You know, when Johnny retired, you know, he made some appearances, never back on The Tonight Show. He did Letterman.
Nope.
And his last television appearance was on Letterman, but he was faxing. He was sending Carson.
He was sending jokes.
And that was Peter LaSalle that encouraged him,
Well, what happened was, so Johnny, it's very interesting. Johnny thought he was going to do more when he left. But like a lot of late night guys, there's not much to do after you've done this. Do you know what I mean?
True.
What's Johnny going to do? He's not going to make sitcoms or he's not going to be in a sitcom or a movie. That isn't him. So he kind of withdrew. I mean, he didn't do a lot, but the rhythm of his life had for so long had been, you know, a monologue, you know, the jokes with Kamani, just monologue, that he started writing monologue jokes. And he would he would call his friend and former producer, Peter LaSalle, and perform them on the phone for one, for an audience of
amazing,
one.
Amazing, amazing.
He would perform his own jokes for an audience of one, and Peter would laugh and laugh. And at one night he said, you know, Johnny, these are good jokes. You should send them to Dave. And Johnny was like, oh, no, 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 I can't do that. I could never do that. I couldn't do that. Like a new writer who was afraid to get rejected. And he finally said to him, you know, let me send some of these. And he finally said, okay. So he sends them to Dave. And Johnny's watching. And Dave does one of his jokes, right, that night. And he calls up LaSalle and he's like, did you hear it? He did one of my jokes. Dave did one of my jokes.
It's amazing. It's
like a new writer who was like thrilled that Johnny did one of his jokes.
Yeah.
He was like, he said he was like a kid, so excited that he did that. And then he would routinely send jokes to Dave. And as people remember, when Johnny died,
all of his jokes were the
Dave
monologue.
Did all the entire his monologue. Was of Johnny's jokes. Yep.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. I know Rip Torn's character, Arnie, on the Larry Sanders Show told Gary Shandling, like, or was explaining who Gary was. He's like, he's half man, half desk. And that's really who Johnny was. I mean, it was always in his blood.
Yeah.
It was always in his blood. And then there was the battle. And you wrote about this too in one of your books about the battle between, you know, Letterman and
Dave and Jay.
Yeah, yes. Which they were good friends. Like, they were, you know, they were always on each other's shows when, or at least, Letterman was on Dave's show. And it was just, you know, and Johnny really didn't have a say. He didn't.
Well, it's interesting, and why it was worth, one of the reasons it was worth writing a book about was these two guys basically grew up in comedy together, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Two guys basically the same age in L.A. doing stand-up and emerging as, you know, television figures. And Dave got the first shot at Carson and killed the first time he did his set.
Yeah.
And Dave was, I mean, Johnny was blown away, like, whoa, this guy's good, and brought him to the desk the first time. He's not, you know, and within, I'd say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, he was a guest host. So that's how fast Dave emerged. So then Jay does a show. He does okay the first time, but then he comes on the second time. His material's not as good. And the third time he didn't do well. So then he was like off the list. He couldn't go back on the Tonight Show. So Dave, being friendly with Jay and needing guests, would have Jay come to New York and be his guest. And he became the number one guest for Letterman.
Yes, he did.
He was on more often than anyone else.
I remember.
And it was a thing. When Jay would come on, it would be a thing. Oh, Jay Leno's on tonight. And Dave would play it up and laugh hard at Jay and everything. And that made Jay viable again as a television performer. So essentially, he saved Jay's career, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He essentially saved Jay's career. And Dave would always say, and he said to me, I learned how to do stand-up watching Jay. Because Jay was already in L.A., and I didn't know how to do it, and I watched him.
Yeah.
And Jay would say, I learned how to do TV watching Dave.
Fair.
I learned how to do TV.
On both sides, absolutely.
Absolutely. So these two guys who have all these links are in contention for this job. And you know, only one guy can get this job, and both of them, like, it was the dream of their lives to get the job. And Dave, because he was already a star on NBC and was doing great on NBC at 12:30, and was already had a reputation for being somewhat, you know, difficult to deal with and challenging, and he would make fun of the network, etc. They liked Jay better because Jay was a more accommodating team player. And they thought he was more mainstream and all this, so they picked Jay against every expectation. I mean, Dave never, ever, ever insisted that when he was getting renewed in his contracts that he would get a shot at Johnny's show. He never insisted when he could have.
Which was a mistake. It was a
huge mistake. If he had a killer agent like Jay had,
it
would have been in his contract 5 years earlier. Instead, Jay's manager got it in his contract. So that when Johnny left, there was no chance for Dave. It was already in Jay's contract. But Dave didn't know, Johnny didn't know, nobody knew that. They had made a secret deal with Jay that guaranteed him the show. And, of course, that meant either Dave was going to stay at 12:30 or he'd have to get another network. And Dave, being somewhat insecure, didn't believe anybody to offer him a show, but they did. And then it became the two guys going head-to-head.
And Jay did 22 years and did a great 22 years on that show. I mean, unfortunately, I like the Conan thing just bothers me. It just always has bothered me. Dave has talked about it. Jay's talked about it a little bit. But what a loss. What a lost opportunity. He never had a chance, I feel like.
Well, here's the thing. And Conan.
I love Conan.
I know Conan since he began, and I'm very friendly with Conan. And I have huge, huge admiration for his talent. Conan was a little bit of a different fit for The Tonight Show. He was.
Yeah.
His comedy was a little bit different and, you know, a little bit awkward and self-deprecating and all that. To me, very funny. But the idea of him getting into The Tonight Show, at the same time, they tried to save Jay by putting him on at 10 o'clock.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that was a terrible idea because the show did not belong at 10 o'clock. It's a late night show. It did not belong at 10 o'clock. And Jay had such struggles about it. And the affiliates did not like Conan. The affiliates did not. They wanted Jay back. And Conan only got 100, what did you say, 150 shows?
145 shows, yep.
Yeah. And almost every host that we know that has been successful has taken a while before he finds his footing, you know?
Yeah.
And Conan would definitely have worked if you just left him alone. It would definitely have worked. But they panicked and they made this move. And look, then they brought back Jay and he came back and he won again. So, you know, justified their move on a ratings point. But in both cases, NBC had to make a very interesting call because Jay is a more mainstream talent than either Letterman or Conan. That's just a fact.
It's very true.
But if you ask any comic or a comedy writer or whatever, who is the more breakthrough talent or the talent that'll be more remembered? It's Conan and Dave.
Yeah.
Because they did more new and fresh stuff. But Jay won. Jay gave NBC what it wanted. And The Tonight Show also, of course, being the franchise, was a big advantage. He had the franchise and he fit the franchise. So that meant for NBC more profits, and for them, they never looked back.
The Tonight Show at 70, always a fascinating conversation with you, Bill. And let's do it again soon. Let's not wait too long.
Sure. Okay.
All right, Johnny's band leader, Doc Severinsen, joins us next.
Hi!